Hi, folks. We didn't get the October 16th sermon, Both Chickens, recorded on Sunday, October 16th. So here we go. I'm going to do a studio version. It's not quite as fun as it is doing it when I see all of you and we can interact with each other. But I'll do my best after a nice big cup of coffee. We'll start with the reading. Here's the most famous story about the king known in several religious traditions as Solomon the Wise. Two women came to the king and stood before him. The one woman said, "Oh, my lord, this woman and I dwell in the same house, and I gave birth to a child while she was in the house. Then on the third day after I was delivered, this woman also gave birth, and we were alone. There was no one else with us in the house. Only we two were in the house, and this woman's son died in the night because she lay on it. And she arose at midnight and took my son from beside me while I slept, and laid it in her bosom, and laid her dead son in my bosom. When I rose in the morning to nurse my child, behold, it was dead. But when I looked at it closely in the morning, behold, it was not the child that I had borne." So far, this sounds pretty believable, like something you might find in the news today. The story continues. But the other woman said, "No, the living child is mine, the dead child is yours." The first said, "No, the dead child is yours, the living child is mine." Thus they spoke before the king. Then the king said, "The one says, 'This is my son that is alive, your son is dead.' The other says, 'No, but your son is dead, my son is the living one.' The king said, 'Bring me a sword.' So a sword was brought before the king, and the king said, 'Divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other.' Then the woman whose son was alive said to the king, because her heart yearned for her son, 'Oh, my lord, give her the living child, and by no means slay it.' But the other said, 'It shall be neither mine nor yours. Divide it.' Then the king answered and said, 'Give the living child to the first woman, and by no means slay it. She is its mother.' And all the people heard the judgment which the king had rendered, and they stood in awe of Solomon." Here, I think, we've entered the realm of something that's not quite believable as a news story, but works very well as a teaching story. You don't have to believe that it's factually true to get the truth that it teaches about love and loss and attachment. Our reading today had two women and two babies, one of whom was almost cut into another two. Today's sermon will have two of almost everything. Two churches, two ministers, two naked gypsies, a man with two first names, and of course, two chickens. I'll do my best to make all this into one single message, but I'm warning you in advance that you might have to settle for two. When I gave my first sermon in public over 35 years ago, my seminary preaching teacher made a point to attend, as he did with every student's debut. After I'd finished, Ron came up to me and smiled. "Congratulations, Morrow," he said. "You just gave two complete sermons in the time it takes to give two." I'll try to stay within the time for one this morning. The fellow with two first names was my friend Babu, who was also my friend Victor. He was Babu to his mostly Hindu co-workers on the grounds of the Theosophical Society in Madras, India, now called Chennai, where he was a watchman, and I was a resident many years ago. He was Victor to the Christian congregation at the church he attended in his home village. It was called the American Advent Church of Tiruvanmiyur, and Babu had pleaded with me many times to join him there one Sunday. I don't think I'd gotten through to him that although I was American, I was not Christian. Or maybe he thought that one visit to the American Advent Church could change that, as one such visit might have changed him into a man who had two names now. So at last I agreed, and he gave me instructions on how to get there. Once there, he said I could ask anyone where the American Advent Church was. After bumping down the coast in a rickety bus the next Sunday morning, I started asking. My Tamil, the language of that part of India, was pretty good back then. Soon I was pointed toward my destination. I walked in the hot sun, not minding it much, thanks to the strong ocean breezes, and soon reached a humble building with a sign that said, American Advent Church. I took off my sandals and stepped inside easily 5 minutes before the service was to begin. My arrival caused a bit of distress until the people heard that I could speak their language. Someone brought a big chair for me that they must have kept on hand for visiting American Advent Church dignitaries who couldn't sit cross-legged on the floor, but I would have none of it and sat on the floor with everyone else, on the men's side, of course. Men and women sit separately in church in South India, as they also do in mosques and temples. My choice of humble seating plainly distressed the minister, but he smiled and exchanged a few words with me before the service got underway. I told him that Victor Babu from their village, had invited me to attend the church with him here. "Oh, Victor Babu, we know him, of course." The church bell told that the service was about to start. I looked around. Where was Babu? I mean, Victor. There was a fairly big crowd, and I couldn't see him, but I didn't believe he would skip church after urging me so often to come. Apologizing for disturbing him just as the bell had rung, I asked the minister, "Where is Victor Babu? I don't see him." "Oh," he replied, just a bit uneasily, "Victor doesn't come to this American Advent Church. He goes to the other one." "Two American Advent churches in a town this size on the coast of South India? You're kidding me." I stood up and said I'd promised to meet Babu, Victor. How far is the other church?" I asked. "Too far. You can't make it now. The bell is rung. Stay." "No, I have to go and meet my friend." I was a little annoyed that he hadn't explained earlier that Victor went to the other church. Maybe he'd been enjoying the prestige of having an American visitor. But now I had to run. "If you miss the start of church, I'm afraid for your soul," called the pastor. I was already running, really annoyed by now, as much by the idea that a soul could be lost by missing the start of church as by the deception about Victor. That darn minister! He hadn't exactly lied, but neither had he been truthful. Whether Christian, Hindu, or Muslim, virtually every one of the almost 80 million speakers of the Tamil language knows the Thirukkural, a book that's been called the Tamil Bible, written between 1 and 2,000 years ago. It's a collection of non-sectarian, ethical, and moral aphorisms, all one-liners, addressed to everyone, no matter what their religious faith or lack thereof. Even people who can't read will commit some of these one-liners to memory and like to trade them in company, much as we trade jokes. Here's one. Vai mayen padavadu yad yenin yadontum timayilada solal. What is truth but unsullied utterances, or words without mischief? These words speak of truth as something that's always part of an exchange. It doesn't exist out there someplace. Truth is dynamic, relational, a matter not only of information, but also of intentions and consequences. An exchange of words cannot be said to be truthful unless it is without timai, without mischief or ill intent, whatever the technical accuracy of any information that's shared. Yes, of course we know Victor Babu. The minister's words were accurate, but there was mischief in how he used them. Yes, I know Victor, but I won't say that I also know he won't be coming. His words were not true, according to the Tamil Bible. I had come for Victor, not for a false suggestion that he'd be showing up any minute now. I ran as fast as I could, holding my sandals in one hand. People stared at the sight of a skinny, barefoot, white guy, but they managed to give me directions even as I ran. I had to cross a wide, sandy place before I reached the next cluster of buildings. In the middle of it was a gypsy woman, noon from the waist up, giving an oil bath to herself and her naked child, glistening, both of them, in the sun. Gypsies are viewed with suspicion and fear in India as elsewhere, and most people look away when they see them. I smiled as I ran by. The mother pointed to me, laughed, and cuddled her child. "See him? What a strange, funny man!" In just a few minutes, sure enough, I reached another humble church building with another sign, American Advent Church. To this day, I don't know how there could have been two of them in Tiruvannamalai, nor have I ever heard of an American Advent Church in America. No matter, I slipped inside just as the first hymn ended, and there was Babu, Victor, I should say, in church. He'd been watching the door, waiting for me to appear. With joy on his face, he waved me to come sit by him on the men's side. There was a little stir as I entered, heads turning, giggles, whispers, smiles from the women especially. Handsome American movie star, right? No, I was hot, red-faced, beet red, my lungi askew, just about as silly a sight as you could ever hope to see in church on Sunday. But soon the minister stepped up to the pulpit, and all eyes turned to him. He was in his late 50s, tall, lean, bald, smiling. "His name is Solomon," Victor whispered. "The people love him." I could see why. He greeted them warmly, asking about their families. "Is your grandmother well yet, Mary? And you, Thomas, has your son been sending letters while he's in the army?" He gave a short prayer and then told us a story. Here it goes. A woman went to a cold storage shop to buy a chicken for dinner. Very few people had refrigerators at that time, and a regular poultry vendor had sold out of live ones before she'd had a chance to shop. She was having guests, so she asked the merchant for the fattest one he had. Now, it so happened that there was just one chicken left in his freezer, but he didn't want to say that and risk she'd go elsewhere to shop. So he went to his freezer in the back room, came out with the last remaining bird. He set it on the counter, saying, "Here's a nice plump one, ready to cook and plenty for your guests." The woman looked it over, turned it round and round, sizing up the legs and thighs, and then said, "I need a bigger one." So the merchant took the chicken back to the freezer, paused for a moment, and came out carrying the same bird. He set it on the counter for the woman to examine. "Now this is more like it," she said. So the merchant asked, "Shall I wrap it up for you?" "Yes," she replied, and then paused and added, "On second thought, I better take the other one as well. Just wrap them both together." I remember the roar of laughter at the Tamil words, "Rendayum kattungo." Wrap them both together, and the look on people's faces of just a hint of surprise at having such fun in a place where you're supposed to come on time to save your soul, plus some relief that they were not in the chicken seller's position. And there was also something more. Solomon wasn't telling us about real events. I don't think he expected us to believe his story in that way. The events seemed perfectly plausible, much more plausible than the story of King Solomon, the two women, and the baby. But that's not the point. That's not the truth of the story. The truth is that a time may come when we will all be asked for both chickens. A time may come when we will be asked for both what we have and what we pretend to have. Both chickens. My friend, Babu himself. Not an insinuation that he'll be coming by and by. Can you think of a time when you've been asked for both chickens and had to stand and deliver whatever you could? It's the stuff of countless sitcoms and movies, a low kind of comedy with a high kind of purpose. We're happy to seem as if we've got it when we don't, as if we can when we can't, as if we're tried and true when we haven't got a clue. We say that we care, but can't find the time when the time comes to show it. Do you remember the Tirukural, that book of Tamil wisdom that I quoted earlier? It has another saying about truth, a mate to the first one that I read before. Even a lie is truthful if it does unsullied good. The idea is that even what's false on the surface can be truthful if it is completely beneficial in results, good for everyone involved in the exchange, good for our world. False? But completely beneficial? That's a pretty tall order, like asking for both chickens when there's really only one. I suppose we can imagine some cases where the benefit of lying seems pretty clear. The house is on fire and a small child has crawled into a tight spot where no adult can reach her. Knowing what she loves best, her mother calls into the bullhorn, "Come on, honey, and you can ride the pony. Come out." Solomon the king would not really have cut the child in the Bible story in two with his sword, but the benefit of seeming like he would seems pretty undivided. But beyond the comic possibilities and the entertainment value, what good can come out of being asked for both chickens when you only have one? Is it good for anything except a laugh at someone else's expense? Although I've said that my Tamil was good at the time, the truth is it wasn't good enough for me to catch the point of the sermon that followed, so I'll just have to wing it myself. How Can the falsehood in this exchange between shopper and shopkeeper be turned entirely to the benefit of those involved, and so become truthful, like the Tirukkural says that it can? After all, something good has plainly begun to happen here, if we look at the situation carefully. What was first rejected now is chosen. It's doubly chosen, this chicken that was at first too thin, then became just right, and now is called for once again. I want both chickens. That's a joyful call to repeat in any church, mosque, or temple. What was first rejected now is chosen. Before the end of our journey through this world, perhaps, we'll all be chosen too. Both chickens, all chickens, each of us and all that we offer. This is sort of like what our Universalist ancestors taught, their legacy to this religion of ours with two names. But now it's time to wrap up both the chickens in this story. Have you been working out solutions? Here's what's come to me. Maybe because I love Indian food. Maybe because I make a chicken curry that friends from the subcontinent have told me is almost as good as their grandmother's, while also making sure that I know that this is saying quite a lot. What if the shopkeeper were to give the chicken, both of it, to the woman, along with a smile and an apology? Then what if the woman should invite the shopkeeper home to share it with her family? There might be less for everyone to eat in quantity, but in quality, there might be more than what's usually on our plates. Not just food, but falsehood turned to truth by the undivided good it does. Also by a bit of grace, plus a dash or two of humor. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if many who heard Solomon's story that day in the little church in South India also worked out solutions that included some creative form of food sharing. Rules about those with whom one can or can't, will or won't share food are some of the most powerful rules in Indian society. Perhaps you've heard of the word caste. It's part of a worldview that divides people into high and low, top and bottom, and even squeezes some right out of the bottom of the order, making them untouchable. You should know that most of the people at the church where I sat that day were either very low caste or untouchable, ritually, spiritually, even physically unclean in the eyes of most folks ranked above them. Many higher caste people at that time would have preferred that a dog touch their food instead of an untouchable. But let's leave that unpleasant stuff till next time. For now, let's leave the congregation laughing and smiling and preparing for the table fellowship that would follow the service as they shared their weekly meal. Sharing stories is as important as sharing food. Solomon's story has enough to go around. I hope it has been enough for you today. I hope that you will share it with at least two other people. Maybe you're leaving today, still hungry to hear more about Victor Babu, his life or his village, feeling that I promised more than I delivered. I'll bring some more next time when we come back to this table. Maybe sometime I'll also bring a chicken or two, and we can share them at a meal. Until then, I'll say, Romba Nandri, many thanks. And Amen.